right. Good morning to you. Wendy Snyder here, and This Week in Health is sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Joining us for our weekly chat, Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. Good morning, Dr. Wheat.
Good morning. How are you this week?
I'm doing great. It's summer. It's officially summer. Are you feeling the heat?
Definitely.
All right. Let's get right into it. Ebola is what we're talking about right now. There is a new strain spreading across Uganda. Scientists and researchers are trying to find a rapid solution. What's it looking like with vaccines and treatments for this new type of Ebola?
Yeah, it does look like there is some hope in the near future. There are three vaccines that are in the fast track to being developed, and there are several medications that are also hopefully going to be able to be used. None of them, unfortunately, are approved quite yet, but it looks hopeful that we'll have something to help us fight this disease that it is so hard to treat.
And, I mean, what are the concerns here in the United States? Any at all?
Well, the biggest concern would be if somebody were to have traveled to an area that is impacted by Ebola and then comes back to the United States. We have seen people that are traveling in those areas diverted to other countries to be quarantined first. So as of right now, it does not seem like there is a huge concern here, but we do always worry about new viruses, new things that we don't have treatments for. So it's important, but no immediate scares here.
You know, I can't remember who I was talking to, but we were talking about something and they said something about Ebola. And I said, yeah, right. Oh my gosh, it is happening again. And then I'm like, polio's happening again. What's happening?
I mean, it really is. When we have people that are not interested in taking the prevention that we have available, or are worried about the prevention that we have available, then we're more likely to see some of these diseases that we had eradicated come back. And so, and with the current state of being able to travel anywhere, hop on a plane and get someplace within 7 hours, then we worry about the spread. And so it is a time where really thinking about prevention is our best protection.
Well, that's great advice because, yeah, I mean, it's been a long time since we spoke about Ebola, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's shocking that we have to talk about it.
All right. Well, vaccines are definitely helpful. You can make your own decisions. But let's talk about another shot. I was working in the garden, as we all tend to do in the summer, and I had the rustiest pair of garden tools ever. Now, thankfully, I didn't cut myself. But what do we need to know about tetanus shots? I can't remember the last time I had one, which means I probably need one. Yeah.
So we say that you want a tetanus shot at least every 10 years. There's a couple of caveats to that, though. If it's been more than 5 years and you do have that experience, had you cut yourself with those rusty garden shears, or what I actually did once was we had had our roof redone and there was a nail on the ground and the nail went through my shoe. So I ended up having to get a tetanus shot early a couple of years ago. So every 10 years, if there's no injury, if it's been more than 5 years and you have an injury, then we recommend that you get another one. And then if someone is pregnant, then we encourage them to get a tetanus shot while they're pregnant, towards the end of their pregnancy, because it's not just tetanus that's in these vaccines. It also protects against pertussis or whooping cough, and so that protection will be there then, too.
Now, is tetanus making a comeback now, too? Because I think it is, isn't it?
It is, and I think part of that is because it was a little bit over 10 years ago that we really started pushes to do the one that I just mentioned, the vaccine during pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And so it was that. And there was also a real push to have adults getting a booster if they were going to be around young children because of the whooping cough, if they were going to be around babies. And so there was a big vaccination push, I would say about 12 or 14 years ago. And so anybody that got it during that push is now due again. And many people don't think about it because it's so long in between that vaccine. It's easy to forget when your last one was. And so many people are just overdue at this point. And so it's easy for both of those diseases to come back.
Yeah, I think I've had one within the last 10 years because I did cut myself with a rusty garden implement. And the best place, obviously, if you have a current doctor, they may not have access to your records from the last time you had a tetanus shot, but chances are it was over 10 years ago. So is there any downside to getting a tetanus shot if you injure yourself?
Absolutely not. It is an easy thing to do. It is not something that you even have to go to like an urgent care or your doctor's office for. You don't have to wait for an appointment. It is something that you can go get at the pharmacy. And so there is no downside. I guess the downside of the tetanus vaccine is it is one that does have often has pain in your arm when you get the vaccine. It is one of the ones that people say hurts. And that's something that I agree with. And so just knowing that that might happen and moving that arm around to help decrease the pain is helpful.
Perfect. All right. We're going to take a quick break. If you have a question for Dr. Santina Wheat, 312-981-7200. And we have some other health topics up our sleeve that we'll discuss next. Wendy Snyder here with you on a Sunday morning. And we are joined again by Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. GLP-1s, your Zepbound, your Wegovy, and what's your other one? I can't remember right now. They are all over the place, and a lot of people are having success losing weight, controlling their diabetes. But now there is something that may be helpful, an added bonus of GLP-1s. Can you touch base with maybe it preventing certain types of cancer?
Yeah, so I think that every week it feels like there's something new that's coming out about how these GLP-1s are helpful. We've already talked about how it helps lose weight, how it helps with diabetes. Those are the ones that people know about them the most. But there also seems to actually be an overall decreased risk in cancer as we are studying these more. Some of it is related to cancers that are more likely to happen when you're obese. And so it does seem that this is helpful for those. It also seems that because of some of the benefits that GLP-1s have in people not using other substances, like we've seen that people are maybe drinking less when they're using GLP-1s, that also potentially seems to be decreasing. But there also seems to be an overall reduced risk in cancers like endometrial cancer, ovarian cancer, this is just really exciting. And so we'll just need to keep watching these to see what other benefits can come through with the use of GLP-1s.
All right. Ozempic is the big one that I couldn't think of. For some reason, the most popular one was the one I couldn't think of. How long have these been tested, I guess, is my question. Because I know some people that are taking it, and one of them went off it and gained all the weight back and so went back on it. Mm-hmm. But long term, have these been studied enough to know what's going to be long term? Because it really seems like everybody's interested in these now.
You know, we can always use more information. But people started getting excited about GLP-1s when they started hearing about Ozempic, Wegovy. But they really have been around a lot longer than that. We've had GLP-1s for probably a good 20 years, actually. These GLP-1s have made a bigger impact than some of the ones that we saw before. They were introduced for diabetes really closer, like I said, to about 20 years ago.
Really?
And so this is not a brand new class of medications for us. Yeah, so we do have longer-term data, and overall it just feels like it's good information, though it is true that when people stop it, we are seeing people gain that weight back. And so it really needs to be thought more of a long-term medication as opposed to a short-term medication.
Well, there are some medications that people have to take for the rest of their life, right? So, I mean, this could just
Absolutely.
It's just...
Yeah, there's so many, just like high blood pressure, many people are on those medications for life. We should be thinking about our weight the same thing, the same way that there's, it really is something that you can be on for long term.
And it's just amazing to me how so many medications are used kind of off brand for other conditions. One of my sons has epilepsy, and the anti-seizure medications can also, I know other people who take them for mood stabilizing and stuff. So it's it's really kind of wild. You doctors are very smart. All right. There was another thing I wanted to ask you about. Now that it's the summer season, all I can think about is potato salad with mayonnaise left out on the picnic table all afternoon, and then someone going, hey, do you want to bring home some leftovers? Just say no if there was mayonnaise in it. But food poisoning or stomach flu, how do we know the difference?
So it can be challenging to tell the difference. They are they present fairly similarly. You have a lot of the same symptoms. You can have nausea and vomiting. You can have diarrhea. With both of them, you can even have a little bit of fever and stomach cramping. But it's usually about how quickly it happens. The food poisoning often happens within hours of having that bad food, and the stomach flu is a virus, and so that virus often takes a little bit of time to impact you. So it'll usually be a couple of days or so as that gets to you. Both things, though, we treat fairly similarly. We really want to make sure you stay hydrated during the process. We want the bad stuff to come out, so we don't necessarily try to stop anything. And then time and rest, of course, for both of them.
All right, so if it comes on quickly, because I may have had an experience of food poisoning that came on very rapidly, but then it was also done away with very rapidly. Is that common?
That is common. Food poisoning can resolve as quickly as like 12 hours, but can take longer than that. Usually within 2 days, everything is resolved. The stomach flu can take a little bit longer than that, but both of them really shouldn't really have symptoms for more than 2 to 3 days. If you're having symptoms for longer than that, then it's definitely worthwhile to be seen by your doctor.
I am very bad at drinking water. I know we're supposed to have a lot. I don't even know how many ounces of water every day. I sometimes can go a week without drinking any water, really. But because of this little experience I had, all I wanted, I was just slamming water. So listen to your body, right?
Absolutely. The dehydration is the thing that we worry about the most with either of those. And so sometimes it's not going to be just water, though. Sometimes you also need electrolytes in there as well. So thinking about even some of the sports drinks, if that's what your taste can tolerate. But absolutely. Hydrated is the best thing that you can do for those, but you don't have the other symptoms that you also get with the dehydration, and that's where it gets dangerous.
I highly recommend the Glacier Ice Gatorade. It's blue and it's awesome. That's what I would throw out there. And Ruth has a question about her shoulder. Hi, Ruth. Dr. Santina Wheat on the line with us.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was told, you know, by an orthopedic surgeon that I need a complete shoulder replacement. I had a hip replacement 5 years ago. I really don't want another surgery again. To me, it just sounds horrible. So I'm wondering, I know of a place in the Chicago suburbs that does a gel injection into the shoulder. And it helps to soothe. It doesn't replace cartilage, but it helps soothe the pain and the movement. Now, would the doctor recommend that? Would that work for me rather than, you know, the complete surgery?
Well, I think she would have to examine you to begin with. But Dr. Wheat, what advice do you have for Ruth?
That's exactly right. It would require an exam. I would probably trust your orthopedist if they're recommending it. They tend to not recommend those super quickly, to be honest with you, as the entire replacement. Often they'll say that it's okay to try an injection first and see if you have relief. But some people have no relief from them whatsoever. So it's really about just trying it and seeing what helps the most. It can decrease your pain for a period of time, but it doesn't last forever. So it might buy you some time.
Yeah.
Although I have to jump in, and I did have those injections, and it probably spared me about 3 or 4 years before I had to get my knee replaced. So look into it, Ruth.
Yeah. Well, I will. And, you know, the doctor did an x-ray and he showed me the x-ray, you know, where the cartilage had worn away. So I'm aware of, you know, that's a real thing. But, I think it's good advice. Try the other first and see how that goes. And then if you need surgery, then go with that.
Because the Joint Relief Institute we advertised here, and it really helped me. So look into that a little bit, Ruth. That might be worth your while, and good luck to you, okay?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, it really helped me. I have both knees replaced at this point. But if it can buy you some time, it's not fun having replacement surgery. And I know Lisa Dent had a terrible time. She shattered her shoulder and had to get a shoulder replacement. And I hear shoulders are so difficult. So I say do whatever you can to try and hold in there without any pain. And the last thing I wanted to bring up to you is kind of a goofy little story I found. There are some ways you can tell different hair color will distinguish different ways you respond to certain medical conditions. I have a redhead, and I have been told that his pain threshold is higher because redheads don't take to anesthesia as well. They need more anesthesia. Mm-hmm. They're also obviously more prone to melanoma because of the fair skin. But has there been a lot of studies on the health and hair color?
You know, I haven't seen a whole lot of studies about this. I have seen that you can have testing for certain genes, particularly for the redhead one that you mentioned.
Yeah.
So there really is, I think, some truth to there are certain characteristics that come out with genes. And so I do think we need to learn more about this. But it is kind of interesting to think that some of our outward appearances might reflect some of the things that are impacting us and how we relate to our health.
Yeah, because redheads are mutants. I have one, and it's funny because I'm half Italian. My grandmother had a couple of redheaded sisters, but he, you know, Michael McInerney's the name, but the redhead actually came from the Italian side. But it is kind of a weird mutant gene. It doesn't happen very often. They're special people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely special.
All right, Dr. Wheat, always a pleasure. I hope you'll join me again next week, even though this last segment was silly. And 630, I just want to read this. Highly recommend Northwestern at Del Nor. I just had a pacemaker implanted there and received the best care. So there you go. True testament, Dr. Wheat.
Thank you.
Have a super week. We'll talk to you next week.